Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 121. I'm Dave Bryant from SteelersDepot.com, and I'm joined once again by Alex Cazora, who's been sitting in for my co-host David Todd for most of this offseason. Alex, happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday, Dave, and I'm in need of some advice from you and Steelers Nation. A good friend of mine from college just got engaged over the weekend, and I'm going to be a groomsman. I've never been a groomsman before, and like most things, I don't know what I'm doing. So what do I got to do to be a good groomsman, Dave?
Set up a good bachelor party.
Okay.
Outside of that, I've only done it, a best man, once, I think, in my life, and I don't remember it, so I must have done a good job.
Okay. I just figured you were in Vegas, the city of weddings, of the very quick weddings. But I wanted to see if anyone has any comments on how I become a good groomsman. Let me know.
Yeah. Now you could provide him a trip out to Vegas and do everything that a good groomsman should do, I think. But I'm guessing that's going to be out of the question.
Yeah, on my budget, like most kids out of college, probably not. But
I hear you. I'm sure you can research that online as well, too, as, if he's a big Steelers fan or whatnot.
He's actually an Eagles fan, so I don't know how to handle – I don't know how to handle that one.
Well, don't do a damn thing for him, then.
I love it.
Let's see here. Alex, we're in the slow part of the off season, but thankfully – there's been a few things to keep us going, and most recently, James Harrison has given us a few things to discuss on this Monday morning. As many of the listeners probably already know, the league has been after trying to get some of their higher-profile defensive players who were named in that Al Jazeera report, I think more than 6 months ago now, talking about Julius Peppers, James Harrison, Clay Matthews. The league has been trying to get them those players scheduled, for interviews to, I don't know why, how there's been really no evidence linked with this. I think the guy who originally had these things to say has since recanted what he's had to say. Of course, Peyton Manning was named in that, steroid use report as well, too. Yet the league still continues on with, for lack of a better word, witch hunt, if you ask me. And, over the course of this past week, the league, leaked it, I guess is the best word for it, that they were getting serious about getting these players scheduled for interviews at the start of training camp. Since then, the NFLPA has released kind of a statement saying that, hey, no evidence has been provided to us thus far, and because of that, you have no good reason to talk to these players, and we're advising these players of their rights, so forth and so on. James Harrison Sunday night released a copy of quote unquote what I like to call it a strong worded letter that he received from Aldolfo Birch from the league, stating that they would like to talk to him on Thursday, July 28th, which is should be the day that the Steelers report to Latrobe for training camp. James Harrison replied with a couple, worthy of discussion responses on Twitter and his Instagram account. First, he says to the NFL commission, "When you say jump, I don't ask how high, I ask why." He later said that he's never been considered, he's never had a bully before in his life, and he's damn sure not about to have one at this point. But since he's a nice guy and he doesn't mind helping to clear the air in the name of the NFL Shield, he'll do this interview with these stipulations. Harrison says that the interview will be done at his house, before training camp gets underway on a date of his choosing, and that Roger Goodell must be present. So, quite a bit there. You know, I don't know which way to go with this, other than the fact of really asking, is this interview with Goodell really going to go down?
Well, the league certainly seems intent on it. I've kind of forgotten half the details of the Al Jazeera case. Because like you said, Dave, it happened 6 months ago, and there was kind of, you know, conflicting reporting, and like you said, they kind of retracted some information. So I'm not even sure totally what is fact and what is fiction at this point. All I know is that while I totally get James Harrison's disdain for Roger Goodell, and how I know Harrison feels like he's being kind of, you know, just, I don't even know what the word is, just, like you said, kind of a witch hunt type thing. He's taking the path of most resistance, and the old phrase is, don't bite the hand that feeds you. If he makes this harder on him than it is, that's not going to help him in the NFL's findings and their investigation. So, he's that guy that knows he's quitting his job in 2 weeks, so he doesn't really care what he says. You know, this is probably Harrison's final year, but he's not making it easy on himself or the league.
Well, I mean, I understand kind of the hardball approach he's taking here, and the other players named in this thing as well, too, from my understanding. I mean, we'll see if guys like Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers wind up meeting with the league here. But, you know, any of us can go out there and say something and put it in print nowadays, but it doesn't, absolutely make it true. And this guy, I mean, it's nobody of substance, you know, talking about the guy who talked to Al Jazeera. Mm-hmm. I didn't even recognize the name before all that went down. I don't know if you did. But, you know, just because somebody can say something like that and put it in print, you know, are you going to go, you know, run around and chasing these rumors and alleged reports every time? You know, there's really been no evidence whatsoever that any of this took place. And on top of it, my God, how many times has James Harrison been tested?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I understand, but isn't it just easier just to have the interview? You don't have to be nice to him. Just have the interview. Say whatever you want to say, you know, defend yourself, because, I'm sure, I know Harrison thinks he's innocent, and we know Harrison's great workout schedule and how much effort and time and money he puts into taking care of his body, but I'm just saying, like, I get that Harrison is upset about being, you know, like he's targeted, and he is targeted, because he's 38, and he looks like he's 28, and he's in better shape than most guys in the league, but, you know, the NFL... they get to decide your fate, and you're not making it easy on them, and that's not going to make it easy on you when they come to decide.
I just don't think you should have to genuflect before the queen, you know.
Yeah, no, I know that's what Harrison says, but, I mean, it is just an interview. It's not – he's just talking to him at training camp. I mean, is it that cumbersome?
Well, the fact is he shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, unless – I mean, if they want to provide some evidence, sure. You know, if they want to let the NFLPA know ahead of time, you know, other than just it being he said, she said, then yes, I agree. But, I mean, just because somebody comes out and says something, you know, that's printed in a less than reputable paper or media outlet, I guess at this point, when you talk about Al Jazeera, you know, I mean, this, let's face it, this isn't, you know, what even originally reported originally in the States, you know, by a United States major media company. So it just seems a mess to me. Yeah. Now, do I think he's going to end up having to talk to them in some form or fashion? Probably.
I mean, he has to talk to them. His options are talk to them or not, and not talking to them would be the worst thing he could do.
Well, I mean, if the NFLPA can give a good reason as to why he shouldn't, and you know, look, that's his side of representation,
mm-hmm,
at this point,
right?
You know, I would like to see the NFLPA fight a little bit harder in this right now.
Yeah,
you know, But look, we'll find out pretty soon, right? I mean, training camp a month, you know, right at a month away from getting underway for the Steelers here. So, you know, this will come to a head. I will say this. I would like to see all this, you know, either get put, you know, either put off or happen before the team reports to training camp, because you know, the last thing that you want is the dreaded quote unquote distraction, and you have to think that. I mean, regardless at this point anyway, James Harrison is going to be asked to meet with the media on day one, even if this meeting takes place or it doesn't prior to them. So he's going to have to get that out of the way right from the get-go.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's the other thing. Yeah, I don't want it to be a distraction. I mean, you know, just do the interview, get it over, get it done with. The NFL, they take so long. They drag their feet. There's so much red tape. By the time they even make a conclusion, I bet you Harrison's already retired, and the league doesn't care about retired players. They're not even interviewing Peyton Manning, who was the figurehead in the Al Jazeera report. So, again, Harrison has to talk to the NFL. That's just the reality. The NFL wants to talk to you. They're investigating this. To not do so is to not cooperate, and that's going to get yourself in more trouble. So, Harrison, again, I understand it all, but really does not have the leverage here. The NFL can call his bluff and be like, nope, we're not going to do it on those terms. And Harrison's still probably going to have to talk to them, because that's clearly the better option than not talking to them. So, like I said, I just hope that gets over and done with before training camp or day one of training camp, and it will hopefully go away for a long, long time.
Now he's agreed to talk to him on his own.
Yeah,
terms.
But
should that suffice?
Or
does he have to meet their terms?
Yeah, no, I mean, the NFL could just say, no, we're not going to do that, and we still want to talk to you. And what does Harrison do at that point? Refuse?
Yeah, you ain't never broken a lot of rules in your life.
No, I know, we're vastly different people, but I'm just saying, man, don't bite the hand that feeds you. It's your last year. Last year, once you retire, say whatever you want about Goodell. Go crazy. Go on every media outlet possible. I mean, this isn't a government, you know, the strong arm of the government here. This is just this is a private business, a league that has its ability to kind of do what it wants, you know.
I think there's principle involved though as well too, and I think that's the main thing that's got James upset here.
I mean, I get it. I know the league has been not kind to Harrison. This is, you know, they're not going to find anything. You know, there's a very good chance of that. But I'm just saying, it's just when you go through the path of most resistance, you get a little flack on yourself.
Well, I hate, you know, I'm not a big fan of having to talk about things that happen off the field. In fact, it's probably the worst part of doing what I do now is, you know, I'd much rather talk about players, you know, what happens on the field, speculating, talking about the salary cap, that kind of thing. But sometimes you're forced to talk about things such as this.
And just to be clear, I love that Harrison. I mean, you know, this is just true James Harrison, and you have to love it and respect it. You know, everyone knows who James Harrison is. We know what his values are, know what his principles are. You know, he stays true to them, and I totally respect that and understand that, and I totally understand where he's coming from. And yes, as the very biased, you know, Steelers fan, you love to see someone try to stick it to the man. But I just from a very logical standpoint, the way I'm trying to think here is just, you know, what is the net gain going to be here? I don't think it's really a whole lot.
All right, moving on, I wrote a little bit this weekend about the Steelers salary cap situation now that Sean Swisham has been released. It's still kind of unclear as to maybe some forthcoming charges for Swisham go this year, talking about 2016 salary cap-wise, and it all centers around you know, he was released with the failed physical designation. That obviously was a result of the injury that he suffered last year during the preseason, talking about the week one game, Hall of Fame game against the Minnesota Vikings. I have you know, researched this out in the CBA, have quoted several things in that post as well too. It's a wait and see right now. We'll have to kind of monitor the NFLPA, their salary cap updates on a daily basis to see when and if maybe an extra, extra amount of money here the Steelers have to pay for as part of a injury benefit here. And that's really all I can add on that right now. And, you know, when you talk about that, is additionally there could be another over half a million charge next year as well, pending from this injury settlement as well. Two players can only claim this injury benefit once during their careers. It does appear, Sean Swisham hasn't come out right out and said, I'm retiring, nor has he filed his retirement papers yet. It does, you know, appear that that's the way this thing is heading here. It would make sense for him to file for one of these injury benefits, and we could be looking at a $1.1 million additional salary cap charge for the Steelers as a result of that. I went ahead and provided an update on the team, assuming that none of that is going to take place right now. Mm-hmm. And I have the Steelers at just under $4 million, right around $3.8 million underneath the salary cap right now. While that might seem like a lot of money at this point of the offseason, and look, it's not like we didn't think there was a possibility of Sean Swisham could be cut, mm-hmm. Later on in the offseason. I think, not many other people listening to this show didn't, think that was a distinct possibility. But now that it's happened, you can take a kind of a harder look at things right now. So you look at that 3.8 of available cap space right now, and you think, okay, well, that's not bad. But the Steelers still have to add a 52nd and 53rd player to the roster eventually. They'll still have to be able to get a 10-man practice squad under contract by the start of the regular season. When you add those things together, that's roughly right around $1.9 million in additional cap space that it's going to eat up. We'll see what happens with this $1.1 million that could possibly mm-hmm. have to go towards Swisham. Right. You have the whole workout bonus thing yet that I don't think has been accounted for in the NFLPA side of things right now. That'll be less than $1 million should be, I think. So where do the Steelers go from there? I think we all agree that a contract extension is forthcoming for David DeCastro. Mm-hmm. That's going to save some salary cap money. We'll see what happens with Lawrence Timmons. We've talked about that extensively over the course of the offseason. If they're able to do something with Timmons and it not, include a new signing bonus, so to speak, new money signing bonus, then you can lower his cap hit, save some cap money that way. We'll see what happens with Le'Veon Bell. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, give him an extension this offseason. It's going to increase his cap charge. The Steelers also like to enter the season with around $2 to $3 million in available cap space. So there's still meat on this bone that needs to be done, and merely extending David DeCastro, I don't think, is going to be enough. Mm-hmm. So, are we going to still see a contract restructure for Ben Roethlisberger, a contract restructure maybe for Cam Hayward? Those are the two likeliest candidates at this point. I don't really know. I mean, I hope there's no concrete evidence that they'll have to do that. As long as they extend David DeCastro, they extend Lawrence Timmons, that might be enough. And when you consider that there might be a few, I don't want to say high-priced players on the roster, but guys making – million and a half this season, mm-hmm. that might not make the roster, save you some cap space there as well too. So that's your boring salary cap update as of right now. And the only reason I kind of went ahead and knocked that out, so close to the last one that I did, is it was a significant release there in Sean Swisham.
Right, right. Yeah, I think you can almost just guarantee that David DeCastro, contract extension is going to get done before the start of the season. It's just about a matter of what that number is going to be. Again, like we talked about, I think one or two podcasts ago, the Osemele deal might muddy that up a little bit, but I think ultimately you still get a deal done. Timmons, let me ask you this, Dave, because you're the cap guy, I'm not. Does it, we are a little surprised that nothing's been done with Timmons, but is the team maybe intentionally waiting to kind of see how everything else unfolded during this offseason so they can know exactly how to restructure Timmons' contract to give them optimal salary cap space possible? So they're going to wait, see everything else plays out, so they know exactly, okay, let's take X amount from Timmons because we need to get Y amount of salary cap space for the season. Does that make sense in terms of how I explained it in that theory?
Well, I'll put it this way. I'm not a bit surprised that he doesn't have an extension in place yet, because what's the rush? Mm-hmm. You know, right. Wouldn't you like a older player on your roster to at least get through the off season injury free? You know, maybe to start a training camp injury free. It's not like you're needing the salary cap space right now at this very moment. So I'm not the least bit surprised that it hasn't happened yet with him. Now, as far as, you know, waiting to see how much here's my theory on it with Timmons, and it's been this the whole way. You know, if you're going to give him new money as part, new guaranteed money as part of this deal, and by that I'm really meaning a new signing bonus, it can't be a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to hope that he's willing to do a deal like we talked about a couple, you know, shows ago, where where basically the only signing bonus he's getting comes from the money that he's already set to earn this season. Mm-hmm. So that you can lower that cap charge. You're not giving him more money guaranteed that you have to amortize. You're just taking a large portion of what you're already set to pay him this year and stretching it out over, you know, 3 years, basically, is what I foresee them doing with that. So now you could say, well, okay, well, we don't need, you know, $6 million of that to be stretched out because we're in a better shape that we thought. Maybe we can get away with only doing $4 right. million. So
that's what I was trying to get at. Yeah.
Right, right. Now that would kind of match what you're doing, but at the flip side, a player probably wants as much of that guaranteed mm-hmm. right up front. But it's not like he's not going to earn it either. Anyway, and people are under the impression a lot of times. I know I was once, you know, several years ago that when you give a player a signing bonus, that the team's right there writing out this large check right then. Mm-hmm. And they give that to you, and the player runs to the bank and cashes that large signing bonus check. That's not the way it works. Mm-hmm. You know, you give the player the signing bonus, and then, you know, you stretch that out over X amount of months, and he's going to get that money. It's just he doesn't get it in the lump sum that everybody thinks that
there's no publishing clearinghouse like my major giant check that you show up with, right?
Right. Omar Khan's not sitting there with a giant checkbook saying, "All right, $30 million sign, $31 million signing mm-hmm. bonus, Ben Roethlisberger. Here you go." wait and don't cash this for Friday. If you will.
Yeah, you can't let a $30 million check bounce. That's bad.
Right. Players are paid that generally, you know, according to my talk with agents, they're paid that out over a course of a season, just like their 17-week base salary paychecks as well, mm-hmm. too. You know, so I don't know why I wanted to add that in there, but you know, it's just part of it as well. So deep down inside, I still think they do something with Timmons. I really, really do, and I think the only discussion now at this point is what's he going to earn base salary wise in 2017 and in 2018, and how cuttable will he be in those future years, and it'll be all based on, you know, basically whether or not you give him a new signing bonus or not. And I don't think they're going to do that. So we'll see. But that's the update on that. Really, there's, you know, outside of DeCastro and Timmons, and, you know, that's the only real places that you're going to be able to save money if you don't go to the Bank of Ben or the Bank of Cameron Hayward mm-hmm. here. So,
and then just the other quick add-on I think you had posted over the weekend, Dave, was, you know, no reason to do anything with Boswell because, what, he's in exclusive rights this year and then – or after this year, then restricted the following year, correct?
Yeah, and I've had people ask me. They say, "Okay, well, now it's obvious that the team's going to move forward with Chris Boswell. Why not lock him up? You know, for a cheap contract mm-hmm. that he would probably be more than willing to sign." The question is there's no reason right. to. I mean, yes, his contract expires after the 2016 season, but he's what they call an exclusive rights free agent after this year. what that means is you can offer him a one-year contract for the minimum for the amount of years that he's been in the league, which in his case would be $615,000, and he has to take that. He has no right but to take it if he wants to play in the NFL. Okay, so he goes through the let's say he goes through the 2017 season there on that one-year contract. After that, he's scheduled to be a restricted free agent at that point. Now, could you sign him to a long-term extension at that point? Sure. Sure you could. And it's all going to depend on kind of probably the bonus money that he's wanting, how long you can get him locked up for. But it's not imperative that you do it just the same, because as a restricted free agent after the 2017 season, you can probably easily retain him with a restricted tender with the right of, what they call the right of first refusal restricted tender for the lowest amount. Now, that amount this past off season was $1.671 million. Come couple years from now, that number is probably going to be right around $2 million a year. So then you weigh out, well, what can we get this guy signed for long term, what the signing bonus will be, and will that cap number, is it cap feasible for us at that point? So there's no reason to do that right now. The Steelers, I can almost guarantee you, the Steelers aren't going to do that right now. You let him kick this year. You give him that 1 year exclusive rights tender after the year's over, and you let him kick the year after that, and then let the performance be the guide at that point. So there's absolutely no reason to extend him right now. The soonest I would expect to see that would be after the 2017 season, and there's no guarantee that happens right now.
Yep, totally agree, 100% across the board, Dave. Kickers are fickle. Kickers have one great year. Next year they come out, they're terrible. We know that with Josh Scobie. He had a great career in Jacksonville, comes to Pittsburgh, totally different guy. Mason Crosby is a good example. That guy has been up and down in his career. Great years, bad year, great year. They're very hard to predict. It's probably the most unpredictable position in football. So, you don't commit unless you're really confident and you have a nice body of work there. And then I think what Villanueva is in a similar spot, too, as an ERFA coming up, and another guy that you should be able to get cheap for the next couple of years.
Yeah, a guy like Villanueva is a guy. Now, look, good big left tackles don't grow on trees. So, if he shows you something this year, then you might want to. But even then, he's got some age on him on top.
And
you have the
option to go cheap, which is nice.
Right, absolutely. Let's see. Over the course of the last week, you've had some interviews with some fringe players talking about Isaac Blakeney and Brian Mahalik. You wrote up some nice pieces on those two players. What'd you learn from recap those for us and the
listeners? Blakeney's just an interesting guy. I know this receivers group is crowded and it's going to be tough to crack. There's no doubt, no debate about that. But he's a 6'4" guy that's going to play in the mid 220, maybe 229 pounds. That's what he was when they signed him. He's a little bit lower than that right now. But he's been a track guy. Track was his best sport, he was telling me, growing up. And he ran track at Duke, was very successful there. So a big guy that's a long strider, that has that track background, I think is really, really intriguing. The one thing that I don't know if was conveyed the best in the article, but I think needs to be pointed out now that we're talking about it, is that he's a super smart guy. It was a great interview. He gave great answers. But, just his ability to kind of, reference about the Steelers, you can tell that he knows who these guys are. He knows who this team is. He was talking about how, Ben is a two-time Super Bowl winner. He was talking about all the close games Pittsburgh had last year, the San Diego game, a couple other close games. Like, he was just doing that on the fly. And so I thought that was, interesting to see how quick he was to recall information and how aware he is of the team and the group that he's a part of. A couple other nuggets of information. He was talking about what a mentor Darius Heyward-Bey has been to him. They were talking about AB, Blakeney called AB the most conditioned guy in football he's ever seen. I think they're saying was if AB isn't tired, then you're not tired. And AB's never tired, so you're never tired, and just kind of that infectious, personality and infectious work ethic that Brown has. So I think Blakeney You know, I know he's a long shot, but he's going to be, I think, a guy to watch out for because he's got a great skill set and I think a good head on his shoulders.
When you talk about Mahalik, kind of following the same path as Villanueva, so to speak. You know, look, obviously he's not going to make the 53-man roster this year. I can almost guarantee you that. But is this a guy, and you know, is he athletic enough to potential for the Sears to strike lightning, you know, catch lightning in the bottle twice?
Well, you know, it's so eerily similar how similar, I guess to use the word again, Mahalik's path is to Villanueva. Those were guys that played defensive end in Philadelphia. Now they're offensive tackles in Pittsburgh. You know, it remains to be seen, I guess, with Mahalik, but he's got a great group of guys around him. Of course, we talked about what Villanueva's done. You know, Mahalik was talking about all the help that he's kind of given him because, you know, Villanueva knows exactly what he's going through. And to be around somebody who does that one in a million, both 6'9 guys that have played defensive end and our offensive tackles, you're in the same city as someone else. That's like one in a million. And so that's, I think, you know, that was intentional by Pittsburgh, I think, part of that, knowing that they had somebody to help him. But I think it's a really cool and really rare opportunity. Of course, you have Mike Munchak in there as well. Yeah, I think the one good thing for Mahalik, though, is that he didn't have to focus on putting on all that weight that Villanueva did. He played about 300 pounds in Philadelphia. He's about 320 now. He said the team kind of, you know, maybe said get 5 more pounds, but it's really minor. So he didn't have to add, like, the 100 pounds in 18 months that Villanueva did. He can just kind of focus on playing offensive tackle. So, yeah, I don't think 53 is going to be in the cards this year. But he's a super intriguing guy. He's got a great group of people around him to coach him up. And, you know, I think practice squad is not out of the realm of possibility.
Well, and speaking of practice squad, man, it was so, you know, it was so good to see them go to 10. Mm-hmm. You know, and now they kind of have modified. I don't think we've hit on that yet either. Modified the rules now where they can have, what, 4 players?
Yeah, accrued seasons.
Two or more accrued seasons, so that opens it up. The NFLPA's got to be happy about that end of it. Should they go even further? I mean, because I think, you know, the old rules when you had, what, 7 guys, 8 guys on a practice squad, you know, it didn't make sense to carry a guy that you were trying to make a position switch on, such as a guy like Villanueva. But, you know, once they did kind of expand that, it opened up, you know, giving you a spot where, okay, let's take a chance on moving a guy like this. I think it's obvious that we're seeing this happen now because of expanded practice squads. Should they go to, like, 15 guys?
I mean, you know, I'm never opposed to giving the guys more chances, but I think we did touch on this real quick at the end of a recent podcast, and I think my focus more is on just kind of opening up the 53 game day roster. Now, I want to see it go from, what is it, I forget, 45, 46, and maybe open up to all 53. I think I've heard a couple arguments against about, I forget what even the argument is, but I would like to see it go to all 53 because I think it's going to be good to get guys play time. To get them their accrued seasons so they can, you know, become a vested player. It'll be good, you know, so coaching staffs have more flexibility. It's good so, you know, guys aren't playing through the pain as often because they know there's, you know, limited depth in that particular day. So hopefully teams and players will kind of be less, you know, be more willing to err on the side of caution because even though we understand how serious concussions are in the league and the Steelers specifically are taking some great strides in it, there is that ugly fact that, you know, teams will do stupid things when it comes to that, and players will play hurt and play concussed and play when they shouldn't be. And so if you open up the 53, I think it's going to help be just another step to alleviate some of those issues.
I foresee us getting to a time where we're looking at roughly 80 players, you know, being kept either on, you know, on a 53 combined with a practice squad, that kind of thing. Were you obviously were a little bit a lot younger, probably don't remember, the NFL Europe League and all like that, but are you in favor of some sort of off-season developmental league 4-week type thing.
Yeah, no, I do remember the NFL Europe, and maybe that's just part of my silly Madden days, because in some of the old Maddens, you would have some of the guys coming over from NFL Europe and things like that. And we know there's a couple success stories. What Harrison, I think, was in NFL Europe for a year, I think. Kurt Warner. Wasn't Kurt Warner in NFL Europe for part of his time? But there's a couple names there. I think it's just really tough to try to do a developmental league. It's just a financial and the attention standpoint. It's hard. You're still in a way competing with the NFL at a very lesser level of entertainment. They've tried it before, whether it's the XFL or the USFL. And what was the recent one that had come out a couple of years ago that folded? With the UFL? Was it just the UFL?
Yeah.
I think.
I think the UFL, and then didn't they have another one try to start up recently that it just didn't even make it out of the blocks?
Yeah, because they needed like a $20 million startup and they didn't get it. Yeah, I remember that one. It was like F something, I forget. Yeah, so as good as that sounds in theory, in practice, it's basically been a disaster every single time. So I just don't think a minor league is feasible in the NFL.
But if the league got behind it, I think, look, I think it would have to be regionally kind of located. You know, I think you would have, in other words, you would have to eliminate a lot of the travel out of it, for starters. But if you had took a 4 or 5 state area, say right up northeast somewhere where all these teams could get to each other real quick, and each team, had to send, 5 mm-hmm. to 10 players or whatnot, and you only played like a 4-week season or something like that. I think they could make it work. The question is would it be beneficial? The league's not going to do it unless it's beneficial.
Right.
So, is it good to get tape on some of these guys, in real game actions? Of course, there's the whole injury thing that goes along with it as well. I mean, would you watch off season? I mean, we already have Canadian Football mm-hmm. League, but we all kind of turn our nose up at that. I mean, occasionally I might watch a quarter of it if it's on. But would you kind of watch a developmental league for the NFL if you knew a lot about the players that were playing?
I'd be more inclined if I knew about them, but I knew about a lot of those guys in the UFL. I remember Shane Boyd scored the first ever touchdown. He was a quarterback with the Steelers in training camp. And I mean, I watched a little bit, but not a lot. If, like you said, if it was on, I mean, I'd watch, but it was more background noise than it was me actually being glued to it. So, and when you say, it has to be beneficial for the NFL, we know what that means. Does it make financial sense?
That means they have to make money.
Does it make financial sense? That's what beneficial is to the NFL. It's a business. So, I should create a plan of how I think I would improve things for those kind of players. And I would, it's off the top of my head, so laugh at me later, please. But I would make it like a 100-man off-season roster. I want 5 preseason games. I want to get more preseason games. I don't want to take them away, because I think the fringe guys, the term that you used earlier, are probably the most like disenfranchised in the NFL. They have the least amount of money. They get the least amount of reps. They are easily, chewed up and spit out. They don't get any benefits. And yet they're the players that need all the reps and need that opportunity, and they get nothing. And I think that is, in a lot of ways, very unfair.
Yeah, good luck getting that getting that fifth preseason game. But on the flip side, if you added stipulations in there that so many accrued seasons don't have to can't be forced to play in a game, like once again, I wouldn't mind it as well too, and I know players on the fringe wouldn't mind it because that's one extra game they get to show,
right?
That they can play in the league, that kind of thing. Yep. I think we'll see another developmental league. I really do. I mean, look, you've got 80 networks mm-hmm. out there that clamoring to show something of substance to capture a viewer audience.
But will it last? Because I think, you'll see them. You'll see them to the end of time. But will they last? Will they be sustainable?
I think it all depends on the quality of a product that you're able to put out there. And if you're able to put guys that legitimately have a chance to maybe make a roster at some point, You know, I thought Europe did fine. Mm-hmm. I think it just became a whole money thing of trying to support that thing overseas and all. And I think that probably played a big role in it as well too. I think there's a way to make it work to make both everybody happy here. It's just they're going to have to find it, and obviously they're going to have to find a network willing to pony up some money to show the games on top of, because I don't think you can rely on ticket sales and that kind of thing to go along with it. But look, the NBA has these developmental leagues, right?
Oh yeah, it has worked for other leagues. The NBA's done it, but that's very, very much intertwined with the actual NBA, and I feel like some of these other leagues have been more on their own, and any league on its own trying to stand up with the NFL is just going to fail.
Well, I think more than anything, like what started this conversation is, it's good to see him go to a 10-man practice squad. I'm willing to bet before too long we see that get as high as, say, 15, something along those lines. And you can make some kind of stipulations that players with X amount of accrued seasons, if they're signed to your practice squad, have to at least stay on the practice squad all. Mm-hmm. You could have some fun with that, and then also have some fun with the gamemanship part of it as well, too. Players can't just be dropped and added from week to week. With certain accrued seasons and that kind of aspect of it as well too. So worth jabbering about during this time of the off season here. Let's see what else we have to jabber about. We're going to move along with our roster kind of positional group breakdown. And we've already talked about defensive linemen. We've talked about the outside linebacker position. So now we're going to move forward and talk about the inside linebacker group with this team. And you can't talk about that group without talking about Lawrence Timmons. We've spent quite a bit of time on Timmons in recent podcasts talking about, is he overrated? There's a select – I really do. I know you brought that up on the site, but I really think – if you take the, and I think people are missing the polarizing kind of aspect of it. To me, that really means, what player are people most split on, polarized, opposite ends. Right. And I think Timmons is a guy that's front and center. A year ago or last 2 years, that would have been Steve McClendon, I think.
I hear you.
But I think it's Timmons now. And I think the biggest knock on Timmons, or perceived knock, is coverage, talking about him in coverage. But people, I think, immediately when they think about Lawrence Timmons and they think about coverage, they automatically want to go back to that Week 7 game last year on that third down and four, was it, in the fourth quarter when Travis Kelce got that big gainer down the seam against Timmons. I think everybody wants to go directly to that. Now, here's the thing with Timmons and, he's a liability in coverage. How many times do we see Timmons targeted in coverage where we know it's kind of a man-on-man situation? How many times does that actually happen?
It's not a ton. And, yeah, I think people just kind of get locked into one or two plays, and that's kind of what they use as their guy. But I bet you if you force somebody to go back and really find specific examples, they'd have a lot of trouble coming up with ones.
And you actually did do that last year. You did in your defensive charting, when it was applicable, and that's a – people got to understand that when it comes to a lot of this, it's very subjective a lot of times. But you tried to, at best, throughout the season, tried to list a player, a defensive player that was targeted in coverage when it called for. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it right now, and I know, and this is a beauty about us kind of doing these shows kind of off the cuff. Look, we kind of outline these things, but not all the times do each other of us know the things that each other are going to talk about. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 times during the regular season you had Timmons being targeted, and that sounds about right, right?
Yeah. Again, just a real quick, you know, add on to that is, you know, I only do that whenever the player has a real chance to compete for the football. Like, I know places like Stats Inc. and I think maybe PFF, let's just say a cornerback is playing off coverage and a receiver runs a hitch and sits down and catches a 5-yard hitch versus off man or off zone, you know, zone coverage, they're charged as a target and a catch allowed. And I don't look at that the same way. I don't agree with that. So I look at things whenever things are tightly contested. So that's why the numbers are always going to be a lot lower in Timmons' case, 11, which, yeah, sounds right.
I mean, that's like, and talking about Timmons, yes, can you go back and find instances in zone, in zone, short zone drops over the middle where a running back or a tight end has caught a ball against Timmons?
Yeah.
Yes. And did you account for those in here? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you have to look at what the player is being asked to do first and foremost. And in zone coverage, he's asked to go to a specific spot in the field. And a lot of times, I think you can even go back to the game, the season opener against the Patriots. You can find instances where Timmons having to watch Gronkowski to one side of him and a running back coming out of the backfield on the other side of him. And did he give up a catch on the play? Yes, he did. But I think you have to understand what the player is being asked to do. I think you have to understand what the actual defense is on a particular play. And even looking at the plays that you have here, Timmons gave up 5 catches on 11 perceived targets. Now, one of those, of course, was against Oakland.
The Crabtree long touchdown. Remember that zone blitz they ran?
Right. Okay.
I have that one marked. Right. There's a long touchdown given up in there. Correct.
That was the card to Crabtree.
Yep. That was the game. I think the kind of the quote unquote game winner. But yeah, that was and Timmons. I mean, he almost ran step for step with Crabtree there. That was a really good ball, and that's running with a receiver downfield. And you know, Timmons wasn't trailing by much. It was just a bad situation to be in.
Right. So I mean, we still have to charge him.
Yeah.
Right?
No, he's still charged. Yeah. I mean, he
But you have to look. But I guess what I'm getting at here is the commenters on Steelers Depot that want to say he's not great in coverage. How many linebackers are going to be great in coverage against Michael Crabtree?
Right, and yeah, you're going to give up passes against Travis Kelce and Gronkowski. That's why those guys are that guy. And yeah, the guy's going to find a soft spot in zone coverage. Players aren't stupid. They know zone coverage. Sit down, show the numbers. I think Timmons still has great range. I still think he's a strong athlete. I understand they're going to dime now. People might point to that. But, you know, Robert Golden is just a better coverage guy than Lawrence Timmons, clearly. And he gives you some more flexibility in terms of where you can play and where you can line him up and some of the different schemes that you can run. So I went back on some of the tape last year, and just to see Timmons go sideline to sideline, his athleticism, his hustle, his closing speed, I still think it's as good as it was, and it's always been pretty good.
The 26-yard catch against from Kelce against Timmons as well too. If memory serves me, he wasn't too far off of that as well, right?
Probably not. Yeah, and Kelce's 6'7"? I mean, he's going to catch a lot of balls.
And he runs like a wide receiver.
I mean, he's a tough guy. He's top three tight end in the league probably. Gronkowski, Olsen, Kelce, I'd say.
And the only and the other, let's see, those were the biggest completions I think he gave up. He did give up a 21-yard completion in the opener against New England. But if memory serves me, that was a running back Deion Lewis coming out of the backfield, and then Timmons missed the tackle, I think, on that play. And that was the play, too, that if people remember – Lewis got down to the 1 or 2 yard line, fumbled, and the ball was right behind Will Allen. Didn't know it was on the ground there. Rob Gronkowski recovers it there. So, all right, now take the blinders off. People, you know, people being too hard on Timmons and calling him not a three down linebacker?
I think that's kind of the easy phrase to use. I'm not sure if I've seen it a ton use with Timmons. Maybe you have more than me, but no, I think he's still a guy that can function. Basically, just what that means is he's a three down linebacker. Can he cover the pass? And while yeah, you might not have him out there in every single situation. You know, if it's 3rd and 13, yeah, you want to have Robert Golden out there or a third safety like they did last year. You know, I totally get that. But the guy can still cover the pass. The guy can still zone drop. He can still carry a tight end down the seam. He can still wall a number two receiver off. You know, he can still do those things he's been doing for years. I don't really see much of a change. And plus, the last month or the first month last year, he had his turf toe, and I'm sure it still bothered him throughout the whole season.
I agree. I think it's a lazy narrative. I think it's the way the same people talk about Steve McClendon as well, you know, during his last couple seasons with the Steelers about his play. I just look sideline to sideline. We saw that burst from Timmons last year as well too, going point A to point B, north and south. He can still move. I don't think he's close to being done. Now is he a Luke Kuechly? No. Mm-hmm. But I think he still has a place in this league. And people, you know, keep talking about, boy, they're probably going to pull him off the field more than they did last year on third down. That might very well be the case. But if you're basing it just off of last season, how many plays was that, 20 to 30 only that they pulled him off the field for?
No, it was more than that. It was getting to be a good bit at the end of the last quarter of the season. But most of that was super third and long, like 3rd and 10, 3rd and 8 and plus. And so that's kind of understandable when you want to get Golden out there to get some more speed and just another cover guy.
All right, let's see. He played 1,053 snaps of 1,105 total during the regular season. So that's 47. That's 52 snaps that he was off the field for.
Is that just regular season? Is that playoffs?
That's just regular season. That's not playoffs.
So, you know, I mean, he's still played a ton. The guy doesn't miss games. He doesn't miss practices. I mean, he's a durable, dependable guy who's always in the right spot. I think he's got a great sideline to sideline, you know, play still a good hitter, still a good tackler. I see the narrative a little bit less often than you. That's why you think he's more polarizing than I do. But if anyone has major knocks with Timmons, I have to disagree.
Ryan Shazier is a guy that I think we would both agree. This guy very well could wind up making a play, making a Pro Bowl, mm-hmm. but he's got to stay on the field for 16 mm-hmm. games. His durability has been in question so far during his career. I understand that with the amount of games that he's missed, but on the flip side, go back and put on the film from that San Francisco game this past season. He did everything, answered every question that you had about him in that game. I can remember even cutting up animated GIFs of him fighting off tight ends, stacking and shedding big guys in that mm-hmm. game. He's a missile. He can split seams. He could get into areas where you probably don't expect him to get into. If there is any question about Ryan Shazier right now, in my opinion, it's A, can he stay on the field? And B, I kind of question his football IQ at times.
I think maybe part of that's just from the lack of reps, lack of practice reps, lack of game time that's kind of hindered him a little bit if you see some of those mistakes. He's been, you know, he was given the ability to call that defense, though, and basically be the main communicator. You know, it's not Lawrence Timmons, so I think that speaks to Shazier's actual, you know, intelligence level. I think it's just the reps that we're missing that he'll improve on, obviously, as he gets more reps. He's going to be probably the next guy in my One Step to Take series, so I'm going to maybe even today try to get into some film work on him to really see what I'm looking for out of him. One thing I, off the top of my head, and this is really more of a scheme issue than it is, I think, Shazier's issue, but the Steelers love to, you know, they'll stack some of their linebackers in some obvious pass situations, so they'll put Shazier, you know, with, let's say, Arthur Motes at the, like, left outside linebacker spot. And a lot of times they drop Shazier into coverage into, like, a curl flat, but sometimes they try to rush him off the edge, and Shazier just cannot be a pass rusher off the edge. He has no functional strength. He gets just stonewalled by every tackle. So, you know, I hope they get him involved as a pass rusher, but stop rushing him off the edge clean unless you're going to do some stunts and twists, because it's not going to work.
What do you mean, Alex? You mean those people that insisted that Ryan Shazier should be a 3-4 outside linebacker coming out of Ohio State or wrong?
Well, I remember I said that one time, or at least floated that idea out. So, yeah, I was wrong. I mean, I was 100% wrong. But
I'm just having some fun with you there.
Yeah.
You weren't alone. I was adamant.
I wasn't as adamant as some people were. I just said maybe. But.
You mean he's not moving to safety, Alex?
Thankfully, I have not gotten one of those questions in a long time, so I am very, very happy about that. Good work, Steelers Nation.
Go put on the 49ers tape is all you really need to do to get a good idea of what this guy's ceiling is,
yeah,
right?
He could be one of the most dominant players in the league. I mean, there's no question about that. Everyone knows where his ceiling is. It's just, you know, can we stay healthy and do some of those little things to get us to that point.
The thing we don't want to see you report at Latrobe, at Latrobe this year is the old Shazier has the ice wrapped around the knee.
Yep. He's got to get those reps. He's got to be consistently out there, practice reps. You know, hone your craft. He just that's what you need.
And this is a big, big year for him as well, too, because the Steelers have to decide next offseason whether or not to pick up his fifth-year option. So he's got all the incentive in the world to learn from the Jarvis Jones, past as well. And you know, if he stays healthy, there, I mean, we could be talking about Pro Bowler Ryan Shazier. We could be talking about a guy with 100-plus tackles in a single season. It'd be nice to see someone else help out in that area in the front line of defense other than Lawrence Timmons having to register 120 or 130.
Just real quick, last thought. I know this is the least important thing here, but since we talk with fans and, you know, we have the pulse on that, this is a narrative-defining year for Ryan Shazier. Fans remember this year, and they will say whether he was a good player and a good pick or the guy that couldn't stay healthy and just always had potential but never saw it.
Good point. Vince Williams, tough as nails, can go point A to point B, north and south. He's got a nice C to do. The thing is, though, is you will see him get flat-footed out in space, out in zone coverage type looks. In my opinion, he knows where to be on the field. It's just this is the player that was a two-down linebacker at FSU. Mm-hmm. You're not going to ask him to do some of the things you would ask Lawrence Timmons to do, but this is a thumper nonetheless, a guy that loves to hit, great special teams player. There's absolutely no reason to believe that he's not making a roster.
Yeah, obviously, he's 100%. Yeah, and really, you made the good point. You know, there's some things with Timmons you can do you can't do with Williams. You really probably can't have Vince do a lot of carrying down the seam, but a lot of times the Steelers are doing some zone drops. You know, they're not doing that all the time. So really, I think that Williams could thrive. Not, I think he could thrive in that starter's role. Yeah, and even in coverage, I think he would be able to hold his own. You might have to adjust a couple things. So I like Vince Williams a lot. But the big thing for him this year is, you know, he's a great special teams guy. He's a core guy. He's an intensity bringer. You know, that energy, it's very infectious. But I want to see him become a leader on that group. I'm not saying that he wasn't in the past, but he's definitely got to be this year because Garvin's gone, Spence is gone, Will Johnson's gone, Will Allen's gone, Robert Gould might be moving off that unit in some respects. He's kind of the old man on special teams now, and there's a lot of young guys around him trying to fight for that roster spot and trying to fight to make a difference. So he's got to help show them the way.
You know, regardless, you're not going to ask Vince Williams and Lawrence Timmons to run with that Y cross. No.
I'm just looking for Pittsburgh to solve it in any way right now because they're not solving that at all. But that's a different topic.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about that when we probably talk about some of these safeties. Another guy, Jordan Zumwalt. There was he just spoke to Ray from Pittsburgh Post Gazette recently, talking about how he's back healthy again, looking to compete for a roster spot. I've never have seen it with this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, he had some good preseason snaps along the way here, but dating back to his college tape, this is an inside only guy, as I've stated all along. I believe you pretty much have stated all along as well too. You want to talk about having to stay healthy for a whole training camp? he's going to have to do that. And in addition to showing that he can play some inside linebacker, he's going to have to be an absolute freight train on special teams. And I know the Steelers have kept him around. Mike Tomlin has fun with him, calling him Money Pit. I will be absolutely floored if Jordan Zumwalt makes this roster, and that's a repeat of what I said last year.
The guy can hit. You know, his hit on Logan Thomas in college was huge, but can he move? And that's always kind of been the concern. But yeah, got to be healthy. Money Pit, the worst nickname in all of sports. I mean, it's great to me, but it's the worst nickname to have in all of sports.
Steven Johnson really is a guy that we don't know a lot about, other than the fact that he is a special teams demon. He has played quite a few snaps at linebacker during his career. How quickly can he pick up this defense? You know, hopefully we don't have to see. One would think that a guy like Vince Williams would see the field before a guy like Steven Johnson. But a guy, nonetheless, that has enough experience, was brought in during the offseason, is regarded as a core special teams player. What else do you know about Steven Johnson?
Well, I mean, that's the bulk of it. He's a four-phase guy. When I say core special teamers, just to clarify what you mean, I'm talking about a guy that plays everywhere and like a four-phase kind of player, like what Terrence Garvin was. And that's what Johnson's done in Tennessee. And he's got the experience on defense. So that's what Garvin didn't give you. Garvin wouldn't give you anything on defense. He just gave you great work on special teams. So Johnson could be put in there on defense. And, you know, I think relatively, you don't want him playing a ton, but he could relatively hold his own. So they needed a guy like that, for sure. They needed an experienced guy, a guy that's been proven on special teams. They got that with Steven Johnson, some added bonus on some defensive work. And I think that was really, really important.
Let's see. I mean, we both expect Johnson to make the roster, right?
Yeah, I think some people kind of question it, but knowing Colbert's history, knowing what Johnson's skill set is, I think he does.
Tyler Matakevich, Steelers draft pick this year, a guy that's hard not to root for, but boy, when you talk about a guy out in space that you don't want covering somebody, it's him. A guy that's extremely smart, though, in diagnosing stuff. A guy that can play north and south and probably play better sideline to sideline than he's probably given credit for. A guy, though, that even, you know, 500 tackles in college aside, hasn't played a lot of special teams since early on in his college career at Temple. A guy that I will be rooting for, and I understand people wanting to slam dunk him down into the 53-man roster because he was a draft pick. But I think when the dust settles, Alex, I will be a bit surprised. I think it's going to take some injuries for Matakevich to make this 53.
Yeah, it just depends if they keep five inside guys or they keep six outside. Yeah, that'll be a big component of it. But he'll play, you know, with his hair on fire. That's what Tomlin loves on special teams. I think he'll have a nice preseason. I think he'll be on the practice squad, worst case scenario, because I think he'll make that room better. I think he makes the competition group better. And for a seventh round pick and a guy trying to work his way, that's all you can ask for.
I'm going to predict that Tyler Matakevich is going to be the guy during the preseason where the fans are saying, you can't cut him and get him to the practice squad because he'll get claimed off of waivers. That's my prediction
and
right now.
He will be
now.
Called Zach Thomas like 79,000 times because that's the
there you go. Anybody else we know? I mean, that covers
the
group,
Mike,
right?
Riley was signed, I think, after all the Kevin Anderson got put on IR. I think that's what it was. Or was he more of an outside guy or was he inside? We'd cover him last time.
I want to say he was more of an outside guy, but then of course we had to talk about Travis Feeney. It'd be interesting to see where they kind of line him up, but right now you would expect him to be on the outside right now. So, you know, I think that there's a possibility that those are the guys barring injury right now, and I think I will be surprised if they keep more than four. And right now you would have to think that it's going to be Timmons, it's going to be Shazier, it's going to be Vince Williams, and it's going to be Steven Johnson. If they do keep a fifth one, it's going to be a special teams demon, much in the same way that Terrence Garvin was last year. So there is a spot open for one of these other guys, but you're only going to keep those guys if they're going to dress for you on Sunday as a member of special teams. Are we getting low on time?
Yeah, I think we're just about out of time.
All right, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazori. You can follow my co-host at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to CedarsDepot.com. Find that donate button in the upper navigational bar. We appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back talking more Steelers football on Friday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.